Welcome to the Draw.Biz Podcast, your weekly dose of fantasy footy content.
G'day and welcome to the Draft Doctors, your home of fantasy footy draft. Subscribe for free so you don't miss a show. We go all year round. We're dropping some knowledge on those new to draft this show and maybe a couple handy refreshers to those bestest drafters out there as well. We're giving out tips and tricks to win your league. And it's been a hot day or two in Adelaide, but nothing could be as hot as the preseason takes off. Mr. Stevie Fizz, welcome.
No, I'm very excited to be here, Doss. Really excited about this show. We see the numbers uptick in December each year before they go full ham, and we think we're bigger than Jesus in January. So to all the new listeners out there, we know there's a bunch of you. I hope there's a lot of content in there for you today. We'll throw a stremple out to the cricketers who pussed out on fucking day one of a test match despite being covered head to toe in armour. You can't hack a ball bouncing around despite the fact you've got a giant club you're sponsored to use in your hands. Harden the fuck up.
I think we're all in agreement here that cricket is shit. And Jono, welcome to you as well.
G'day, Doss. G'day, boys. G'day, listeners. No rant for me this week. I've exercised the demons and I'm nice and calm, ready to get onto the tips and tricks for this week.
All right, a tip would be not to watch the those poor little kids at halftime, apparently, was the hot fire take from last week by Jono. But Cam, you are here as well to give some of your tips and tricks for season 2020.
Yeah, that's right. And a little bit disappointed that it's a little bit less relevant to say swimming in tits for swimming in tips, but let's go with it anyway.
Well, you've already brought up Jack Watts' name this preseason, so you're trying your best to weave him in any way you can. But we will start with Jono and your first tip or trick for next season on how to win that league.
Yeah, so you're going to be hearing us talk about this from now until we start drafting, really, and that's all about tiering. And when we talk about tiering, it's basically grouping players from a certain line, whether it's your forwards, midfielders, or defenders, who are going to have a similar fantasy output for that year. So, for example, in my forward lines this year, I've got Dusty Martin and Lachie Whitfield. They're my tier one forwards that I want to pick this year. And then coming out tier two, I've got Michael Walters. So he's just below Dusty and Whitfield there. And in my tier three, I've got an Isaac Heaney and Toby Green. So that's how I'm grouping them. As you go down your list, those tiers will get bigger and bigger because you're going to have more players in a similar sort of grouping of averages as well. So when you are doing your tiering, it actually helps you with your draft and sees how a draft is progressing. So you might be sitting there with your list and you'd be ticking off midfielders like crazy because people are ticking off midfielders left, right, and center. So that's going to show you're going to have more of your top-tier players in your forwards and your defenders, also your rucks to an extent, but if you don't get one of the top three, you always wait till round 20, as Steve likes to say about grabbing a ruck. So I'm not going to really talk about the rucks so much, but especially your forwards and your defenders are there. You want to grab a player that's got the least amount in it in that line. So you might have Matt Crouch in one tier, and you've got Jack Lloyd, Rory Laird, James Sicily in your defenders, and you've got Dusty and Lachie Whitfield, and we'll throw Michael Walters in there as well. So you want to grab Matt Crouch because that means you know that one of those defenders or forwards is going to come back to you eventually. So there's more chance of that happening, and it increases the value of that pick as well when it comes back to you as well. So tiering is very important, and make sure you do it. I think... There was one year in our draft I didn't do it, and just it really stuffed me up for a fair bit of my draft, and I had to play a lot of catch-up, so wasn't paying attention. And so it's really important that you do your tiering, especially this year. We're going to talk a little bit about position scarcity a little bit later on, so, and that's going to affect it as well.
And how exactly, like, if you just talk us through it like a little bit more, maybe Steve, you can jump in as well. At what point are you going to put your cutoffs, and does it change from year to year in terms of your tiering? Like, we know it would have to change, I guess, like you're saying, with maybe your positional scarcity and stuff. But, you know, how do you go about your tiering, for instance? Like, what's your process, this process?
So I'll do my ranks, which we're ranking in the mid right now. It's ranking season. So I'll have maybe 60 to 100 players. And then I go, right, 1, 2, 3, put a line through it. And then another group, put a line. So then I know. And then I'll even just write tier 1, tier 2, tier 3 next to it. So I know I've got my 4 sheets on draft day. I'm sitting there looking at my tiers and ticking off and then looking for the best value when it comes to my pick.
Yeah, I like to have some balance in my tier, especially as we get further down. I think Jono's points are well taken when you're at the top of your position rankings. But say we're getting through the teens, say in your forwards or defenders or what have you, there becomes a bit of balance. Like, it's not all just based on last year's average. Say you've got who's someone who's particularly injury prone?
Devin Smith.
Let's say, yeah, Devin Smith's a great example. We saw him be like the leading forward a couple of years ago. Obviously, this year had his battles and has had them in the past. But we know what his upside is. It's really high. So, do you put him? You might put him in a tier with someone who doesn't have his upside, but maybe is a little bit safer pick. I don't have the picks right in front of me, but Darcy Parrish is probably the exact one. Like, they're Essendon teammates. Maybe Darcy Parrish does have good upside. Obviously, a young player coming through. But that's sort of my example. Like, so there's balance as well, and as you're drafting your team, you can sort of weigh up, well, when's a good time to take this player? Guy like Josh Dunkley last year, prime example, wasn't exactly one of the first forwards taken off the board. But if you drafted pretty safe in the early first 3 or 4 rounds, you might have gone, you know what, now's a good time to take a player with some upside rather than a safer style player.
And it also can backfire on you as well a little bit. This year in our home league, in our draft, when it came to my pick, I had Tim Taranto available and Jeremy McGovern. Now, it's both my tiers were telling me I could pick one or the other, but for team structure, it said for me to take Jeremy McGovern as that pick. And so when I didn't get Taranto, I think Steve took him a couple of picks later, it actually really threw my team out because that was the M4 I was looking for as balancing my team, but I didn't get it and I was just chasing tail for the rest of the year. So kind of can throw it out as well if you're not paying attention as well. That's why you don't drink on draft day.
But, again, in saying that, things really broke Taranto's way to a way we didn't think it would. So, you know what I mean? Like, hindsight's...
You and I were both still pretty... I was pretty keen on him, but thinking around 100, but what he did was, a bit above and beyond as well.
And I am an advocate for tiering as well, sort of joining on board last year. I adopted it heading into my draft, and it is something that's really handy and doesn't really, like, you can go to the lengths of really focusing and taking your time with it, but you can also just chuck, like you're saying, a couple of lines in, and it really makes a big difference on draft night. So pretty easy tip there heading into your next season and crucial as well. Steve, do you want to take us through your first tip or trick?
Yeah, and it's really the nuts and bolts of everything we do here at the Draft Doctors. It's why we release a pod every single week, all year round. And it is, you don't win your league at the draft. There's going to be so much focus from now until draft day, whenever your league draft day is. And it really is the best day of the year. Don't let me take anything away from it. But just because you don't have what seems on paper the best draft doesn't mean you're not going to win. Like, so much changes throughout the season and you really need to stay on top of it. And listening to podcasts like us and the Traders and so many other fantastic podcasts out there and staying connected on Twitter with all the information regarding things like injuries, trades, and role changes happen. Like, we so often forget that just because things are one way at the start of a season, they don't always stay that same way. Like, look at Rowan Marshall. Wasn't picked in round one for the Saints. The GWS mids, they all got injured at some stage. Toby Green and Zach Williams were in the midfield. Like, it's just massive. The Carlton midfielders, once Bolton was sacked, it was Mark Murphy, Ed Curnow straight in there. If you were on top of that situation, you might have been able to land a great deal as the run home to your final. Brody Smith, his last 2 months, average 94, dream team after the bye, like, huge. Jack McRae, I know all the focus was on Dunkley, but he averaged 130 dream team after the bye. Dan Houston was in the midfield. Like, draft The draft sets the foundation for your team, but you can have the best draft in the world. If you don't stay on top of your team and you're in a competitive league, you won't win. And another thing that happens over the season, matchup data reveals itself. Like, good teams don't always stay good teams. Like, we all thought, you know, a lot of people predicted Melbourne were going to be in the grand final this year, and they were a great team to play against. You know, teams bring taggers out of nowhere that you didn't expect. It's such a crucial thing to just stay on top and manage your team the whole way through.
Yeah, it's something that seems to come up basically every year. We can sort of rehash it. I know these are one of the podcasts of episodes that doesn't really age. Like, you can listen to some of our older ones, and there's some more great tips and tricks. I was sort of having a listen back as well, and Cam said it last year as well. Don't be disappointed at the end of your draft day, because like you said, it's a season-long thing. You can have the crappest team on draft night potentially and just come away with some really big wins. But yeah, Jono, what have you got to add?
I just remembered, you mentioned going back to listening to past pods, and I was listening to the tips and tricks from last year, and which I wasn't on, and this is the pod where I got the sack from being the host, so 12 months as host. Well done, Dossie.
Yeah, thank you very
much. Coach's panel didn't want anything for me, so they didn't even want me, so cancelled the whole show.
Yeah, I was also letting you guys know earlier, it is a great listen back because you can hear some of the statesman's best work, and I listened back and heard one of his finest mispronunciations of Mark Blickass was one of the ones that came on one of those old pods. But Cam...
I'll just jump in, and we're not talking about... I've noticed on the run sheet, none of the tips or tricks are about trades tonight, and Statesman has some really good tips and tricks about getting trades done over the line if you want to go back and listen to that stuff. So I know people are always asking about trades, and I would recommend if you're new to draft and want to execute some trades to go back and have a listen.
Yeah, he also touches on some keeper league stuff as well. So I think most of our stuff is really single season based tonight as well. Cam, what have you got for us?
Yeah, so my first point is around narrative bias, and it's sort of convincing yourself there is only one outcome for any given player or situation. And I think, you know, we all do varying amounts of research over the preseason, and the culmination of that research is that we arrive at some kind of rankings for players relative to each other to then use as a drafting soundboard on draft day. And I think the problem that we can generally be susceptible to, and it's really hard to actually overcome this, it is that element of narrative bias, where you convince yourself that, say, that someone will absolutely achieve X amount of average for this year. And it really blinds you to the other potential outcomes for the players. I mean, Steve is always one that talks about the range of outcomes, and I know we kind of, you know, make a little bit of fun for it, but it's actually a really important exercise when you're doing your research to go through that exercise of asking yourself, but what if X happens? And really forcing yourself to reject that bias and focus on multiple narratives for any one player to build what you think are their range of outcomes. The big three management consultancies, McKinsey, Bain, and BCG, will all tell you that when you're defining a strategic narrative, start the sentence with, for this strategy, you have to believe that, and then list the preconditions for that to be true. It's a really simple way of trying to identify what that range of outcomes is, and it will, you know, even when you say it out loud, you start to then question, well, actually, maybe Jack Stephen is 30 years old and he, you know, has had some issues in the past, even though he's playing forward at Geelong. Maybe he's not the safest pick. Yeah, that's it.
I think a really good example of this happened last year, and it's being, you know, being tossed up. You could have come into the season and said, Josh Dunkley killed it in the back half of last year heading into 2019. He's going to keep that going. And I think, you know, we sort of debated over last preseason. It was Toby McLean and it was Dunkley that both had the role, and they switched about halfway. We came into this season and it actually was very much a split sort of decision on what happened there. So there was the narratives, if you will, because he averaged, you know, the 93 in the first half and then 126 in the back half. And it was like, well, there's multiple outcomes here. And it wasn't just that one narrative, but that was sort of one where it actually was split both ways. But I understand what you're saying. Steve, what have you got?
No, I think it's a well-made point that Cam's talking about. And I'm really interested in this sort of logic because I'm watching it play out on Twitter right now where people are debating Tom Mitchell. Now, we've already spoken what my position will likely be on Tom Mitchell as we head into the season, and that's what it is. And other people are just, well, you can't pass him at pick three. And, of course, a million things can happen. What if he's not picked round one? What if he averages 115 and it's 100 over the first half and 130 over the back half? Like, there's so many interesting discussions about Tom Mitchell. None of them are going to be proven right until the end of the year.
Yeah, absolutely. And it, like, comes down to, I don't want to eat into my second point too much, but it just comes down to, like, really convincing yourself. I think at the end of the day, you have to convince yourself that one of the narratives you've come up with is okay. But at the same time, like, just being cautious and aware of what the others are is really important.
Yeah, no doubt. You know, I'm not going to argue with anyone taking him at number three, but I've, you know, we've got our reasons for differing opinions, and that's fine. If you can't back up your reason with a good logical reason as to why that occurs, then we've got issues. And I saw that with Westhoff last year where people were still backing him in despite the statistical argument being really hard to get behind.
Or Cade Simpson.
Oh, baby. I've owned that. That's a mistake. That was a bad...
Listen, I've got one staring me in the face this year, a man at Gold Coast that I'm still just being stubborn and a lot of the evidence is facing me head on and my narrative sort of, like I'm very guilty of this. The same as last year with like Bailey Williams, someone like Bailey Williams who had improved every year and I'm like, oh, there's no way he can't improve again. And it's like, well, yeah, internal competition. There's just so many things, like you said, Steve, to weigh up.
If you look at, just quickly, if you go into DT Live, they will have a list of all the averages and people plugging in what they expect their player to average next year and 90-something percent of them all go up. No one wants to choose the one that goes down, unless it's like the dog's balls obvious one.
Yeah. Hey, check out our regression pod from a few weeks back. You'll see a few that we think will drop. And even then, we sort of have to argue a bit, and it's always, they're not going to drop. All right, I'll go to my first tip here. And really, it comes down to just setting some pre-ranks, and regardless of what that is. And it does come down a little bit to what Jono was saying at the start as well with your tiering. But honestly, even if you're just a casual drafter or if you're taking it seriously, I know in a lot of casual drafts, people rock up. And there's been no rank set at all. And I don't know if it's just the people that I'm drafting with, but, you know, just come in with a bit of preparation and it's going to save you a heap of time and a bit of less stress on draft night as well. Because my main point here as well is just numbers don't tell the full story. So draft night's the best. It's an awesome, fun time. It can be stressful. And being prepared is just crucial to avoid that brutal sort of panic attack you can get. So setting these pre-draft rankings is really good, particularly when you have to pick quickly. So a few draft sites, for instance, this year and in the past, you have the order by 2019 fantasy average, or in Ultimate Footy's case, they've got, say, their predicted or projections on their site as well. But I think if you just spend a little bit of time shuffling a few up and a few down using your own rankings, maybe our rankings as well, you can mix that in. They'll be available on the Draft Doctors website sometime next year, or a combination of your gut feel, whatever you think, a bit of prep just does help. And just a few quick changes here that illustrate how numbers can lie to you on your draft board as well if you don't set your pre-ranks and just go by average. This is just a quick look at how injuries have affected some numbers here. So Witherden's average, for instance, he averaged around 75 AFL fantasy. That put him at D39, your 39th best defender, or around that. My ranks might be a bit slightly wrong there. But without the average that he got of a 3 that he scored in round 19, his 78.4 average moves him up to around 11 spots. So that's pretty big on your little draft board of defenders. He moves up 11 spots just from that one game that's wrong. Now, Canelio is a big one as well. Minus his injury game, he jumps from a 103.7 AFL fantasy average to 111.1. So if you're just coming in on draft night and you see him at 103.7, you know, he's sitting around some other guys that just may not be at his level. Now, he might drop a bit as well next year. You don't know. There's lots to think about, but that's just a little bit to think about there. We also saw sort of Trav Boak as well. You know, he's going to be sitting at around the 12th best mid with the 106 average. We've talked about him in the past, a few past podcasts, but like you look at his splits from round 1 to 10, he averaged 100 and nearly 113. Then he dropped 20 points to 91. So that's going to sap, if he's averaging 91 next year, it's going to sandwich him between guys like Hugh McCluggage and Took Miller on your draft boards rather than guys way up the top of your list. So I think it's just important to maybe set those pre-ranks. DBJ is one who had an 8 in round 22, and we can't excuse that because he had about 90% time on ground and we'll never be forgiven. But another quick example of how this isn't injuries, but this is centre bounce attendances, hashtag more mid time, and its effect on my boy, Braden Fairenny. Round 19, he spent 31% in the midfield and 79 AFL fantasy points. Round 20, 14% of centre bounces, 81. Round 21, 24% and 81. And you get to round 22, 69, very nice percent. He goes up to 100. Now, I'm not going to say that that's, you know, what are we going to look at next year? What's he going to average? I'm just saying on your draft board, he sits at 99.7. There's a lot more internal competition at Gold Coast. And this is what I was saying before, my narrative of what he's going to do next year. You know, you can easily convince yourself that he could just drop down to an 80 if he doesn't get the centre bounces. But Jono, you've had your hand up for a little bit there. I've talked for a while, but that's what have right. you got?
I'll just add to your preparation there. We do your pre-drink draft rankings at. Don't print off the previous year's averages and positions because they all change. And you do get caught out on your draft day. It's like, oh, crap, I need a ruck forward or something like that. I'll get Paddy Ryder. Sorry, stiff shit, he's ruck only. So into the ruck line you go and you've wasted a pick. So just be a bit more diligent and make sure you get all the positions for 2020 and not the previous ones as well because that can really affect your drafting as well.
Yeah, sure. Steve. What have you got? You want to take us through your second tip here?
Yeah, sure. And it's a question we get quite a lot of the draft doctors, and that is drafting a breakout in the right spot. Obviously, we all love the breakout player last year. Timmy Toronto was someone, you know, hot on everyone's lips. But you want to get them at the best value, i.e. as late as possible, but you still want to make sure you land them on your team. And I was sort of thinking about a player who fits that this year, and I could only come up with Andrew Brayshaw. We've all sort of talked about how much we love him to break out. His average last year, sorry, I should say his list is a forward mid, so he's really just super attractive from that perspective. He should be very relevant as a forward. Last year, averaged the 69 nice Dream Team points and 70 Supercoach points. So first thing we got to consider is Cam sort of touched on earlier is what's his range of outcomes? Okay, what's the best case scenario for Andrew Brayshaw? Because this is, I kind of like look at it as a bell curve, like, you know, best case, middle case, worst scenario. Best case, he averages probably low, mid to low 90s and is in that top 10 forward conversation. He brains it in the midfield, shows his pedigree, yada, yada, yada. I don't think that's super likely, but I think that's best case scenario. Like we saw with Tim Taranto last year, injuries went happened around him, absolutely brained it, all that. What do we think is the most likely? I think personally, it's probably a mid to slightly high mid 85 average. So 85, 86, 87, 88. I think that's reasonable for someone who's playing. I would expect pure midfield to expect their game time to jump up, more pre-seasons, less competition, all that sort of thing. Worst case scenario, he really doesn't hit those heights. He's a sub 80 forward. He really doesn't do much. He's a matchup play and he's, you know, someone you didn't feel great drafting him. So if we look at the most likely, we put him into a tier sort of probably around guys like Jordan DeGoey, Darcy Parrish, perhaps Devin Smith, though I'd expect him to be ranked a little bit higher based on what he did in 2018. Chad Wingard, Hugh Greenwood, those sort of guys. Now they're sort of the 85 to 78 averages from last season. Now, the first question, well, the first thing you got to say to yourself is you have, if you really want him, you have to put him into a tier where you're okay missing out on him, okay? Because it only takes one person in your draft league to draft a player too early, and you can never take them. That's opportunity cost. That's their loss. And if they've gone too early on a player based on where you had them ranked, that is good for you. It pushes players you like down further, okay? So if you want other, you know, if you're happy missing out on Andy Brayshaw because you'll end up with, oh, I'll get Hugh Greenwood or Darcy Parrish, That's fine. If you're not satisfied with that, put him above that. Okay, that's okay. Like, I'm not saying this is where you have to rank someone. If you really want them, you have to put them above those guys who you'd be disappointed with as a second prize. Okay, so we all like those players, and this is where tiering comes into effect. If you've got him too low, you'll miss out. If you've got him too high, you'll get him at a poor value. But if you've got him in that sweet spot, and you're seeing, you know, maybe he's, say you've got three defenders and five forwards in that second tier or third tier, whatever it is, you go, well, there's less defenders left. I'm a better chance to get a forward in the next round. I'll take player X, defender X, and then 1, 2, 3 forwards go. Maybe Brayshaw's gone, maybe Brayshaw's still there, but you've still got a tier 3 forward or whatever tier it was, okay? That is how you do that. That is how you tier, and that is how you don't rob yourself of value. And again, like if someone goes too early on him, hey, that is great news for you. That is great news.
James Warple was the big one last year we saw. He just went variety of places in draft, and you had to have that. You had to be ready to see, you know, if he went too early, which I'm sure he went, you know, in hindsight, it wasn't too early. But if he went too early for where you thought he was going to go, or if he fell in that sweet spot, it would have been, you know, being prepared for that and knowing where to draft him is yeah, it's a great point, Steve.
I think people need to be also aware that you're drafting at a roughly a one-to-one split, and that is a one midfielder to one other position split. That's generally what happens, especially in the first two rounds. So, you know, you really have to stack up that midfield, especially the DPL league. So just be prepared. It's hard to get everyone you want from your tiers.
Now, Jono, you've been tearing your hair out a bit. You've been doing your forward rankings, and you're going to talk to us a bit about positional scarcity.
Yeah, so position scarcity is when you look across the lines of the teams in terms of which line is going to drop off the quickest in terms of talent and also the hardest to replace, say, a Lockie Whitfield if he goes down with an injury. So I was doing my forward rankings on Sunday and I was completely sober and I just wanted to kill myself. So I was just shocked. Like, I did my first 20 and it's like, well, there's 20. Who am I going to put next? Like, you could just throw a whole blanket over these players and it wouldn't matter because, I mean, I haven't deep dived completely into it, but it just looked like they're going to be all same, and it's going to be very hard for that forward position this year to see who's going to get the bumps, especially when we've just been talking about, say, a Devon Smith and a Darcy Parrish. They're fighting for the same position, so someone's going to get a bump, someone's going to not get that bump, and where you rank them, it's going to be hard. So looking at the forwards, I see, I'm talking Supercoach here now, the best scoring. In the forwards, you had three blokes average 100. That was Dusty, Titch, and Walters. And then you got maybe 10 guys in the 90s. Dusty, Whitfield, and I have Titch written down for some reason. Dusty, Whitfield, and Walters.
Can I have him as a forward, please?
Absolutely. There you guys who average 100, and then you had about 10 guys who average in the 90s, and then there's about another 20 to 30 blokes. It's 85s and below, so you can just throw a blanket of them. And again, this is where you'd want to grab one of the first high-scoring players. Just as a tactic for your drafting, depending on where I am, I'd be looking to grab one or two of these guys. Look, Whitfield, if I'm not in the middle part of the draft, he's probably going to get picked up after the gun midfielders and rucks. But if I'm on the turn, there's an opportunity for you there to grab, say, a Dusty and a Walters. If it's captain's on, yeah, it could be a little bit more tricky than you're playing pass the parcel for your captain week to week. But then you can use that as a bargaining chip to maybe trade up later on for one of those gun midfielders. So I'd be looking to grab as many of those good forwards as early as possible, because you know there's depth in other positions in your back line that you can replace them anytime you like, really.
Hey, Jono, do you think, I mean, last year we sort of went by the mantra, you know, right or wrong, however it was, but we sort of thought that punting rucks was going to be a reasonable strategy last year. I think it worked out for the most part. You know, if you miss out on your Grundy or your Gorn, your punt rucks. Could that be the case with forwards this year? If you miss your Whitfield or your Dusty or whatever, could you just draft someone later on and just hope they'll churn out like an 80 and just, you know what I mean? Like,
well, and that's
is that something you'd be looking to do?
Yeah, definitely, because you know there's more, there's greater value that way in your other line. So if someone's grabbing Dusty and Whitfield, okay, they're gone. There's forwards available, but and if they're grabbing those lesser tier ones, there's higher scoring or higher averaging midfielders and defenders sitting there, which I can bolster with my team. And I mean, if you're good enough, you're going to find that diamond in the rough as well. Like, and then just play matchups. Like, there's another trick as well. You play matchups, punt your F4, punt your F5, and play matchup week to week. I mean, it's a bit more work involved in it, but that's something I did a couple of years ago. Like, I didn't have an F5, so I just streamed an F5 for majority of the year. So it is something you can look at.
Yeah, I think we've seen over the years that there's more players who have forward eligibility than are listed as defenders or pure midfielders than any other position. And they're generally easier to play in matchups week to week. So I think forwards are quite a low value position. It's probably the one I'd target the least. So, I mean, I still like to get, you know, I look at my top tier forwards and whoever's the one who's sliding, I like to have a good forward and hopefully a second, an F2 who's, you know, like a Tom Lynch from Adelaide sort of player who no one seems to like, but he's always good value. And then just, you know, load up because that's where the breakouts come from is the forward line.
Yep. On to the next one. And Cam, you only need to listen to the Draft Doctors for all your information this preseason, right? That's how you go into a draft?
That's correct.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah. No, look, this point is all about doing your own research and sort of acknowledging the fact that, you know, we're but one resource and that there are plenty of resources available in the fantasy community and Supercoach community. You know, Steve, how many sites do you use to do your research?
Quite a few, and beyond that, I will say that, especially the last year or two, the community has been particularly giving to us and very nice, and we have a lot of good conversations behind the scenes with a lot of good people, and that can be as simple as asking, hey, what do you think about this player? I had the same conversation about Titch with someone, say, oh, you know, where are you leaning? And it's great just to get other thoughts. It's a great, great community, and I actually think it's getting better.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And like when I was sort of reflecting on it, you know, I could name 10 sites that I at least go to, and then I have conversations with people, and then I, you know, do my own rankings and look at your rankings and look at, you know, the DT Talk guys' rankings. You know, I just feel that if you're going into a draft underprepared and you have no chance or opportunity to actually do deep research, then it's fine. Like, you can go in with a couple of perspectives or one perspective and still have a lot of fun and still not, you know, be concerned that you're going to absolutely throw the league for the year. But to give yourself the best chance at coming up with a really good team on draft day, you know, do your own research, criticize other people's opinions constructively, but then also be open to criticism on your opinions on certain players as well, because it will make things a lot, you know, a lot more solid for your team.
Yeah, it's a really good point. I'll get on to my next sort of tip. And this just comes from the fact that we're talking about winning, you know, how to win your league and stuff like that. And I feel like when you're winning your league, or if you get the opportunity to win your league, you just don't get the same satisfaction if that league is a piece of shit. So I think it all comes down to having the crucial role of the commissioner to make that league fun, enjoyable, and competitive enough. Well, competitive comes from the players as well. But making it just enjoyable enough for you to really enjoy those bragging rights over the off season. And I put a little tweet out just to get the community's sort of opinion on what makes a really good commissioner here. I think one that I really enjoyed here was from TWR, and he just says, creates that theater for draft day, along with, he says, you can't be bullied as well. So you've got to really stick to your guns when creating your league settings, etc. But I really think that creating that theatre for draft day, and also sort of incentivizing. I know a lot of people have interesting ways to incentivize, like not sort of giving up once your season's over, whether that's like, I don't know what the best way to do that is. I'm sure other people have good ideas. Like I know some people offer a prize for like someone who does the most trades or something like that, just to sort of keep the league active and involved once you're, say, out of the finals hunt. But anyway, I'm just like, I think the crucial role of the commissioner here to keep leagues really active, enjoyable, and so you can really enjoy those wins. And as much as it is a crappy job sometimes to be the commissioner, that was a lot of the feedback I got here from Kay's here. He says, you've got to thrive on being the most hated person in the league. That's probably an accurate one for some commissioners out there. Brennan says, you know, you've got to be able to love winning a flag only to be accused of rigging the entire competition. So, you know, Steve, you've said easily manipulated here.
Because I'm the league commissioner and he thinks he's got his claws into me like a puppet.
I also wrote down massive cock and then deleted it. No, I think Doss's point's well made. A fun league's a good league, right? That's why we play. It's fun, it's good banter and all that sort of stuff. We were lucky enough, some loyal listeners messaged us last year to create a video where we ranked their keeper teams and had a lot of fun with that. And that's sort of, you know, please don't everyone message us to do a goddamn video. It was a pain in the ass in the end. But the point stands. It was good fun and you know, that sets the league apart and they have a great day on draft day. Looked like the loosest league of all time. So, go on, you guys. If a spot opens up, I'm available.
Yeah, I think just, you know, a second point, because the whole point comes down to making the league enjoyable and enduring. Like, you kind of want this thing to last for years. You don't want it to be a one-season wonder sort of thing. And, I know that Statesman's not on the pod and the points about trading are quite well received, but, you know, it also comes down to making sure that, you know, you trade fair and equitably often. Because there is a very good chance that if you're in a 10-person league and you are super aggressive with your trades and you probably get the better of a lot of people, you've got 10 less people or 9 less people to trade with next year. And all of a sudden, people get a little bit more reserved and a little bit more cautious. So I think a commissioner in that instance being the, you know, not the governance per se, like they don't need a hammer to or a gavel, but making sure that people are not taking advantage of others is quite important.
Yeah. Get yourself an awesome commissioner. Have a fun draft day, all that sort of stuff. Make the league fun. That's the main tip. Jono, you're going to take us through some of the preseason hype that we can get. You know, I think this year it's called the Marsh Series or something. So what are we going to see in the Marsh Series this year?
What?
And what do we have to be careful of?
What happened to JLT?
I've lost the sponsorship, mate.
Oh, fuck. Cam, get onto this and change it, please. Marsh Series. What the fuck is this shit? Anyway, JLT hype and salary cap hype. When it comes to the preseason, there's going to be articles upon articles of Tom Mitchell is going at number one. He's got a price discount. He's going to burn it up, get 130. They're all killing it on the track, this, that, or the other. Don't get too excited because, as we know, a lot of players at this time of year are training with the midfield group or the forwards or the defenders or whatever. So we will hear that, yes, Jax Ebel's with the midfield group, but he's listed as a forward, so happy days, let's get him in nice and early, but ends up being a lockdown forward and scores you 60. So just be mindful of that. And we saw it last year in the JLT with, I think it was the Port Adelaide and North Melbourne game. Tom Rockcliffe racked up about 50 possessions, scored 160, and everyone's like, right, Tom Rockcliffe is back. But you have to have had watched the game to find out how he accumulated those stats. And that game was no defense. It was just open slather, goal fest. I think both teams kicked about 140 points each. So there was possessions all over the shop. So just be careful of how games actually played as well throughout the JLT. Doss, you came down to Melbourne. We went out to Casey Fields to watch Brisbane and Melbourne. And we're looking at Jared Lyons in the midfield going, this is great. He's, you know, kicking four snags in the midfield. Gus Brayshaw's killing it as well. And what happened? Jared Lyons goes to the forward line until the second half of the year where he brained it, and Gus Brayshaw, well, he was just basically put into the outer wings and never seen basically until the last two games. So,
I'll say as well, I remember Lachie Neal stunk it up too. He had like 28 handballs and two kicks in that same very same game. We're like, gee, we better, what's going on with
Lachie Neal? Lachie Neal carried that through the first couple of weeks of the season proper as well, because even old mate Stato is going, what the hell's going on? So if you can, try and watch the games to find out how it all unfolds and how these scores are actually accumulated, because just because you see the stats, then stats can be easily manipulated. Like Trent Cotchin's made a career of the old 1-2 handball. So
just wait a sever it.
Sorry.
So are you saying Cam McCarthy wing season might not be correct?
Is this the week to restart our hype of the week? Cam McCarthy.
Well,
the inaugural hype. Yeah,
Sean Darcy is ruck, Rory Lobb and Matt Tavener as the key forwards, and then it's a possibility. It is a possibility.
Yeah, it actually made sense because we spoke about Hogan going up. I spoke about Hogan going up there anyway. So
yeah, it is all the potential in the world. Who knows? Oh, Cam McCarthy averaging 90. Shivers. But just, yeah. Just give it your own sniff test and get your eyes on the game just to see how things have unfolded throughout the JLT.
All right, beware of preseason hype, and Jono gets shivers immediately after. There you go. All right, that's all the tips here. Does anyone have any just final little nuggets to offer before we move on?
Oh, really? Don't be drunk on draft day. Really, really strong take on that. And don't be the whiteboard guy.
Yes.
Just try to have fun, man. Really, that's what it comes down to. Just try to have fun.
Bit of banter.
And, you know, a lot of it is just the good teams make the finals and the team that runs good at the end wins.
It's true.
All right, check out the Draft Doctors in the off-season for all your off-season draft needs. We've got Steve wrote an article outlining some of the extra burn men you didn't hear on last week's show. Last week, we went through guys that maybe could be burning you in your draft next year. And, Steve, you added just a few extra up on the website in an article.
Yes.
Also, if you want more keeper content and miss the under 22 show, that was from a while back now, but Stato's got his full list up on the website, along with we've got an article by the fellas over at the Keeper League pod with some of the 2019 draftee numbers for your keeper and dynasty needs as well. We'll just get on to some questions now from social media, and give us a follow on @TheDraftDoctors on Twitter. You can search The Draft Doctors on Facebook. And let's get those Instagram numbers up as well. I'm still trying to convince Steve to be posting his photos on Instagram. It is the spot where you're supposed to post photos, Steve. But we will get on to
what's our the login? Twitter. I don't know what the login is.
The same as everything else, mate. You know what it is.
Oh, really? Is it?
No,
okay.
All right. We'll get to @TheDraftDoctors on Twitter, where you can catch all of those fire memes that Steve makes but does not put on Instagram. And we've got some questions. This one comes from Russ. He says, should I draft George Haaland-Smith, Cam?
Well,
if you're playing a Neefle fantasy league, yes.
Let's talk range of outcomes. So I think at the high end, he can go for about 30 average. And at the low end, he's delisted.
Okay.
You make a call.
Ben Latham asks, me it seems, what round will Doss be taking his boy Stanley Kubrick? He's a first round pick, guys. One of the all-time directors. Any arguments there?
Should we do a top five directors?
Interesting.
Oofed.
James Campbell next week.
I know we said we'd stop doing the top fives, but
yeah, sure.
All right, next week. Warning.
Maybe Dossie, you should put in this would be a great rankings challenge. Dossie makes a Tropfest movie.
Oh. It could be Bailey the Bulldog in film if he ever finishes the book.
We'll see what I can do. Warnie, he asks, what's the sweet spot for league structure, i.e. how many from each position should be drafted? And he says, i.e. again, 10 teams times 5 defenders equals 50 on field each week. Further to that, what's an ideal number of bench players to get more movement on your trades and your waiver?
Yeah, the shorter the bench, the more waivers and trades I think you'll have. I think our home league works really well, Jono, actually. We only have a 4-man bench and you are constantly ad-dropping. You cannot hold an injury. of course, we don't have dedicated emergencies. We don't have emergencies. No. We are locked out and fucked a lot of the time, quite frankly.
So we actually, in our league, we used to run a 5-7-1-5-8 league. And to try and pump up the trades last year, we went to a 5-7-1-5-4 for that logic. The logic being you can't hold injuries, you've got to trade them. But people just wouldn't trade at all. And so we're actually reverting to the 8 so that there's steak knives to incentivize a little bit of a trade.
Well, we found that with our home league. We're a 5-7-1-5, 10-person league, but it's taken a bit to get the ball rolling. Like the first couple of years, it might have been just the top-end players doing a few trades. But this year, because we play Supercoach, we manufactured our own final system because you have top 8 in the top 10 in a 10-league team for Supercoach. We manufactured it that the top 6 make the finals, and that caused a flurry of trades and waiver wire turnovers. Like, I think there was, over the bye round, Steve put Prestia and all these other good players in the league. Blink and you miss, and they all went. And like, I didn't see him get up there. I think Steve got most of them back anyway, but it's such a quick move. So you can even play with your league settings as well to make it, you know, a top 6 or a top 4, so it does encourage the trading to make that to make the finals.
I think as well, just to your point, and maybe because Steve and I had completely opposite views, it comes down to like the type of people you're playing with. Like, I think in my league, they may be a little bit more reserved, don't trade as often, and therefore you need that extra incentive. But for yourselves, it sounds like, you know, they're more incentivized to just to win. Like, win is the answer,
yeah.
And just do what you need to do. Yeah.
Yeah. Everyone seems to want more trades, right? Because I think at the end of the day, everyone, and I was sort of doing a bit of study on this, if you go into, say you're doing a trade, you go into that trade with a positive mindset, like you feel like you're going to get the better of the trade. And there is evidence to show, there's science, evidence to show that if you go into something with a positive mindset, even if the outcome is negative, you will remember it as a positive experience. And I kind of feel like that's how people view trades, because everyone always seems to want more, even if they're a shit trader. So I think that comes down to league personality. And also, people tend to want to just do the banger trades. They want to do Whitfield for fucking great players. They don't want to just swap low-end players. So I think that's more just people want the world.
Yeah.
We've got another question here. This one comes from Bagels. What injuries do you guys stay away from, or what's a good time frame to aim for players coming off injuries as well? So we've touched a little bit on someone like Titch, who's your high-end player coming off an injury, but what about some other guys? Like, I think we sort of already mentioned Dev Smith as well, but what are some of your takes on these guys?
So first of all, foot injuries are just awful. They really stop your rehab. Hannah's, yeah. Basically, if you hear anything, soft tissues are bad. Shoulders are also quite problematic. You could be missing for a week, or you could be missing for a year with those. But for me, it's foot injuries, anything around a syndesmosis or a Liz Frank, stay away.
Yeah, I'm probably the same. It's the feet injuries, and if you've had repeated injuries over a few years, there's evidence to show that scar tissue builds up, and you're more likely to have soft tissue injuries. But again, I'm building that into my tears, so I'm prepared to take on a couple of these guys. It's not in the early rounds unless it's say Titch drops to me at pick 12. I will take him. Okay, I'm not blind to Titch, okay? It's not like that. There's a point, okay?
And with the players coming off injuries, I'm going to assume that they're on the waiver wire for a long-term injury. It all depends on how your team's traveling along. Like, if you're top of the ladder kicking everyone's ass, then you can afford to grab maybe a couple of long-term injury guys. Like, say, Nick Natanui's 5 weeks away. You can just stash him away there and not have a care in the world. But if you're struggling to make the finals or need to win, then it's a bit harder to do that. Like, over the bye rounds, for instance, I had Jared Berry listed as an 8-week injury, dumped him, and then it went down to a 2 or 3 week injury. Someone else grabbed him. So it all depends on how your team's traveling along in the season, I'd imagine.
Mate, your best ability?
Availability.
That should be a t-shirt.
It should be a t-shirt.
Speaking of t-shirts, if you're in pre-season form, like the Draft Doctors, head over to the website where we've posted our new t-shirt, More Midfield Time.
Yes.
Because everyone's getting it, so why don't you get your t-shirt? It's Christmas time. Spend some money. Help Cam get some new, baby formula or... What do you need? Canned water.
Maybe Cam can get me one of the shirts, seeing as I haven't got my cartons yet. All right, we'll get to the last question here. Fantasy bets. He says 5-7-1-5 comp with 10 teams at pick 5. How do you know what position you should target first? Ruck, mid, forward, defender. If it's Grundy, Whitfield, Titch, and McRae gone. So very specific question there.
True law. No, I actually saw AFL Fantasy Bets tweeting, because he was tweeting about the Titch situation. And I think Treloar is probably the unsexy pick there for me. It's probably the easy pick. But if you're in a 5-7-1-5 league, you can't go wrong drafting high end mids. As boring as that is, if you look at the, say, top, you know, if you look at the top 100 averages, you, at the end of the year, you'll find more guys that boost into that area from the defenders and forwards than the midfielders. Like, the midfielders are already drafted, so it's really easy to play forwards and defenders off on a week-to-week basis. I know that means you'll miss out on Lloyd and you'll miss out on maybe some high-end forwards, but again, you never go wrong drafting a high-end mid, and realistically, they're the easiest people to trade later on. People always want midfielders.
Yeah. All right, keep hitting up the website. That's thedraftdoctors.com.au. Follow the Draft Doctors on the socials. Subscribe, leave a rating and review, and tune in next week. And for the outro, it's over to you, Baby Fizz.
No. Come here. You can do it. Just say, leave a rating and review, and we'll see you next week. Come say it.
No, but me and Mum have to water the garden.
No, we'll do that after.
Come on.
Can you say,
we'll see you next week?
See you next week.
Do it right into the microphone.
I'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Draft Doctors Podcast. For more tips and in-depth analysis, head over to thedraftdoctors.com.au.